Voice America. Welcome to Central Coast Voices, addressing the ramifications of change and how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community. This is a program and an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. The program is made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellard Sargent. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. This week, the Center for Action for Services in Action at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo is hosting a 16th annual Change the Status Quo, a social justice conference. This conference aims to empower students to use learn-by-doing spirit to challenge social norms, ask critical questions, demand solutions, and make lasting social changes. Through guest speakers, inspiring workshops, and engaging sessions, students are afforded opportunity to a newfound sense and understanding of social justice and how they can take ownership in their role in moving the needle with regard to social change. The conference will kick off tomorrow night with a documentary showing Near Normal Man about Ben Stern, a local Holocaust survivor, and how he has lived his life as a social activist speaking out against Nazis and hate speech. Ben Stern will also be keynote speaker at the conference on Saturday. My guest today will be discussing how the Center for Service in Action at Cal Poly connects students with meaningful opportunities to complement their educational experience, strengthen their understanding of diversity and social responsibility, and develop skills to become ethical and knowledgeable leaders who contribute to global society. Joining me with, and these are all from the Center for Action for Service in Action at Cal Poly, are Bradley Kiker, Senior Coordinator, Megan Rivoir, Coordinator, and Philip Goodwin, a graduate student. A little later in the show, we'll be joined on phone by with Charlene Stern, the filmmaker of the documentary they're showing on Friday night, and the daughter of Ben Stern. Today's show is live, and you can join our discussion by calling at 805-781-3875. And thank you very much for joining me.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
I want to start first and talk a little bit about the Center for Action for Service in Action at Cal Poly, and you know what this is. And I gave kind of a real quick overview, but can you talk about how long it's been there and what you do?
Sure. Well, the center started actually back in the 1970s, per an executive initiative from the chancellor's office for the whole CSU system. And it was mainly to bring meaningful service opportunities for service learning to the campus and make that available for students for making meaning out of their learning outside the classroom, for being able to pretty much just be the conduit for all things community service from a local level clear up to a global level. So we run four main programs in our office. The first is Student Community Services, which is actually a cadre of eight mini programs that are student-run, student-led, and they offer students opportunities to engage in local community service here in San Luis Obispo County, leveraging our partnership with 350-plus community partner agencies. And that's where students can come in on their own initiative, motivated by their own desire to serve, and on a whole host of different interests and needs in the community, from animal welfare to the environment to different human social services, and so on. So it's a great program for students just to sort of begin their entree into service. And then we have the Alternative Breaks program, which is where at each academic break we take service global, and we take teams of students to do service projects around in city, mainly urban areas around the United States. And then also in the summer we take students to go internationally. And we've been to places like Cuba, Cape Town, South Africa, and then this summer we're planning a trip to Lima, Peru, and Cusco and Machu Picchu and doing service projects. And then we also have the service learning, which is our partnership with faculty in the campus who have put service as a requirement in their course. And we partner with them to, again, leverage those relationships with our community partner agencies, have a discussion with those faculty and say, how might the learning objectives of the class be fulfilled through meaningful service opportunities? So again, it's stepping into that learn by doing. And the tagline for our whole center is learn by doing good. So we kind of build on that university motto. And then our final program that we run is the AmeriCorps program. And that's, as you know, the Domestic Peace Corps. It's a federal grant that we manage out, and we are the supervising agency for the San Luis Obispo County and Northern Santa Barbara County service area. And again, tapping into those partnerships that we have with nonprofit agencies in the area, we have currently in this grant year 13 AmeriCorps fellows who are placed in those agencies doing a year of national service. And volunteering their time and helping those agencies build their volunteer infrastructure. So really adding to the supportive services of the county in a very dollar and cents way. And so that is sort of the array of our programs. And then on top of it, we do a couple of big flagship events. We do Make a Difference Day in the fall, which is a full day of service for the community to participate in both on and off campus, and then, of course, why we're here today, the Change the Status Quo conference, which this year is in its 16th offering.
And have you guys always sponsored this conference?
Yes. Yes, it actually was founded kind of out of a groundswell of students recognizing their own need to be versed and equipped and trained in social justice issues and how to be an agent for social change. And so they began it 16 years ago out of their own initiative.
And about how many students come through the center or utilize the center in the programs each year?
Well, it varies year to year, mm-hmm. but we have upwards of close to 1,000 students who come in and are somehow touched by our service or our programs or engaged in our programs in some fashion or another.
Have you been seeing an increase over the last couple of years, or has that been kind of steady?
It's been pretty steady the last couple of years, and we're, of course, trying to do a lot of intentional work to increase that. And we have some intentions in our or goals in our assessment plan this year to definitely be growing our programs.
And for the outplacement, for the programs that go into other areas, into urban areas, into other countries, how long is that placement for? Is that a summer placement?
No, those are short-term projects.
Okay.
So the winter break and spring break trips, those are usually domestic. This year we every fall during the winter break, we go to New Orleans. That's the one that's sort of static and we do every year, and we've built a lot of substantive relationships with agencies on the ground in New Orleans. And, of course, that all began the year after Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah. After Katrina. And is the rebuilding around Katrina, around
exactly.
the damage done from Katrina?
Yep. And also, of course, subsequent natural disasters that have sadly visited upon that city.
And what are the students doing using that New Orleans trip as an example? What are the students doing when they're going to New Orleans during that break time?
They are working in food banks, packaging food or sorting food for redistribution. They are working with an agency called the NOLA Tree Project, which is an amazing agency that is trying to replant the urban forest around New Orleans, as well as construction and community beautification program or projects around the city. And then there is well, Philip actually can help remind me on some of these, because, and maybe Philip, you can tell them the rest of those, since you just went on the last trip to New Orleans.
Oh,
yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, great.
I was the
What'd
staff member that led the trip. This past winter, we also worked with Project Greenlight. It's an organization that seeks to exchange non-energy efficient light bulbs for more energy efficient ones, particularly in areas most affected by Hurricane Katrina, like the Lower Ninth Ward. And so groups of students go out into folks, strangers' homes, essentially, to exchange light bulbs. And it is amazing to realize how many light bulbs are actually in a home. That's something that we don't often think about. And then lastly, we worked with GrowDat Youth Farm. It's a local sustainable nonprofit farm, urban farm in the heart of the city of New Orleans. And they grow food for folks that can't otherwise afford it or wouldn't have access to healthy fruits and vegetables. And they also sell them at local farmers markets at a reduced cost for folks. And for 7 hours that day, we weeded their garden, which is a task that not necessarily anybody wants to do, but it needs to be done. And we took an incredible group of about 17 or 18 Cal Poly students with two staff members and spent a week doing service. And to see college students doing service before your eyes is incredible. To see students who dedicated, you know, a week of their winter break to not only spend the money to go on a trip, but also to spend a week actually doing the service is really incredible. It gives me hope for the future.
So you spent your own money to go?
No. So me as a staff member, I'm covered by our staff, the two staff that are covered by the service or the Center for Service in Action.
And the students
do pay a small fee to go on the trip themselves.
So what is the impact for the students? I mean, obviously, it's got to be huge.
It is. And it's especially interesting. We have three pre-trip leadership trainings that we meet with the students before the trip. I mean, it's incredible to see when they first walk in and then to see by the end of the trip how much this trip has actually changed their lives. During the trip, when we were working with NOLA Tree Project, we had planted 50 trees in an area that hasn't seen vegetation since Katrina. And there was the group of 15 students planting, there were 18 students planting the trees all day long. And one of the neighbors actually pulled over and stopped her car and said, "We haven't seen trees here in New Orleans in our neighborhood in over 12 years. And she thanked us for the work that we were doing. And I think that really highlighted for a lot of students the impact that they have on others' lives. When you don't even realize it, especially when you plant trees, you don't know how a tree really can affect somebody or impact their life until you have folks like that that pull over and take the time to say thank you. One student in particular had mentioned before the trip, He actually mentioned this during the last part of our reflection together. He said, "Before this trip, I couldn't really find my place at Cal Poly." He's the first year. I was struggling to get by. I was struggling to make friends and to meet new people. And by the end of this trip, I have found a family, essentially, of students and people who can support me in all that I do. And I think that is the defining moment for each one of the staff members in the center, because that's really what we're here for. We're here to provide a community for students on campus to not only feel welcomed and supported, but also to go and welcome and support others outside of the community as well.
Are these, you know, the students that you said there were 17 of them, are these students that typically would have done this or have done a lot of community service in the past? Or are these people that this is something that they're really exposed to through this organization, through this relationship on campus?
Yeah, so it totally varies from student to student. We have first-year students all the way through fifth-year students in a wide variety of majors. And some may have little interaction, let's say, with service, in their own communities back home or here in San Luis Obispo. So it really just varies on student to student. Some, obviously, are very passionate about doing service. Others have often said, you know, this is an opportunity that just kind of arose, and here I am taking part in it because it's something that I've never done before.
And you've been doing this how long?
Well, I've been in the Center for Service and Action for about 3 years.
Okay.
I've been at Cal Poly as a student developmental educator and counselor I'm in my 15th year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So before that, I was an academic counselor for one of the colleges at Cal Poly. Mm-hmm. And had an opportunity to, try something new, a new sort of iteration of student developmental work, bringing a lot of my experiences that I have done advocationally for the better part of 25 years, taking people around the world doing service projects and using my vacation time, working with nonprofits that do that sort of thing. And so it was a really great opportunity to bring those personal interests into my job that I do every day.
And do you see this, you know, as a student counselor and your role as an educator, how do you see this having an impact on the students that you've encountered?
Well, in all the ways that Philip just described, right, especially as it has to do with specifically to a given project, when we take students and give them this opportunity to take service outside the local community and to get an understanding of their global community.
Right.
But the other, speaking of it in more of a global or holistic sense, the impacts are really profound for students. Service allows them locally anyway to transition well into their college experience by getting to know their community where they're going to be a citizen for the next 4 to 5 years. It allows them to build friendships with those that they, and so they begin to have a good, strong social support network so that they can begin to have that sense of belonging and community here. And data and years of research and nationally in higher ed shows us that when students are able to forge a sense of belonging and a support group of friendships and a sense of community, that they tend to persist through and successfully transition through their college experience. And then as they transition through their college experience, they're able to make meaning out of their learning outside the classroom. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're able to build their cross-cultural competency. That tends to be a hard thing to do in San Luis Obispo at Cal Poly in a predominantly white community with a predominantly white
university. With a lot of university. Affluence. Even though there's poverty, there's certainly a lot of affluence.
So it gives them the ability to come into contact with people who have different life experiences and different backgrounds from them, different from them ethnically, different from them culturally, different from them economically, and across a whole wide spectrum of social identities. And to experience that difference and know how to navigate it well, those cross-cultural and intercultural competencies are critical. And what our employers that give our graduates of Cal Poly jobs are telling us they need. And so this also then, in that regard, helps them transition out successfully, because if they've had these service experiences, they can build a resume and become conversant and competent and capable in these areas that employers are looking for.
Yeah. And the conference, you know, is such an outgrowth of this. And I want you to talk, Megan, a little bit more about that. But if you're just joining us, you're listening to Central Coast on KCBX HD1 San Luis Obispo, KNBX HD1 San Ardo, and KSBX Santa Barbara Voices. Is the topic today, upcoming Change in Status Quo Conference, including Friday night documentary showing Near Normal Man and keynote speaker Ben Stern to talk about his experience as a Holocaust survivor and how he's lived his life as a social activist speaking out against Nazis and hate speech, and how and why the Center for Action programs connect students and meaningful volunteer opportunities that complement their education experience, strengthen their understanding and diversity, and social responsibility and develop skills are all topics of what we're talking about today. The voices you hear with me are Bradley Kiker, Senior Coordinator for Cal Poly Center for Service and Action. Mev Rivoire will be talking in just a few minutes about the conference, and Phil Goodwin, graduate student, has been here sharing some of his experiences. In the next quarter hour, we'll be joined by telephone with Charlene Stern, who's the filmmaker of the documentary that's going to be showing tomorrow night, and the daughter of Ben Stern. And today's show is live, and you are invited to join us in your discussion with your comments or questions. You can call us at 781-3875. And again, that's 781-3875. And Megan, I want to go over to you to talk a little bit about this upcoming conference starting tomorrow night.
Yeah, starting tomorrow night. So I'm actually somewhat new as a staff member to the Center for Service in Action, but I'm very excited to be here because when I was a Cal Poly student more than a decade ago, I was involved in these programs. I was one of the main conference planners for the 3rd through 6th annual Change the Status Quo conferences. Wow. So it's really neat to see how it's grown and evolved and really stayed as a part of the Center for Service in Action, an important part of all the work that we do, and to work with the students involved in helping organize it. So this is our 16th annual conference, and as you mentioned, it's a social justice conference. So the goal of the conference is really to educate students on social justice issues, motivate them to do something about it, and then give them the tools to act on it, connect them with local nonprofits and resources and ideas to just really know how they can have a part in helping make the world a better place. So there will be a documentary showing, as you mentioned, on Friday night. This is our free preview night event. It's open to the public. It's happening in the University Union. And we just like to have an event on Friday night to get people in the social justice mindset. So we're really excited to have Charlene Stern coming to show her film Near Normal Man and then lead a Q&A afterwards. And then leading right into that, we have a full day on Saturday, starting off with keynote speaker Ben Stern, the subject of the film. He's a 96-year-old Holocaust survivor. He lives in Berkeley, and he is just living and breathing social justice and just standing up for what you believe in and not standing by and letting hate speech occur. And following his speech, there will also be a Q&A, followed by a full day of workshops, which there's about 27 workshops in a variety of topics: gender and sexuality, race and diversity, destigmatization, and then just general activism and leadership, organized by a wide array of people. So we have student groups presenting, we have lecturers and professors speaking, and we have a lot of community groups joining us as well to share a different topic.
Yeah, and these workshops look great. I was looking on your website, and I downloaded some of the stuff that was on it. For instance, under activism and leadership, social media activism is presented by Mayor Heidi Harmon.
Absolutely.
Who really did use that significantly during her campaign.
Absolutely. And now as well as in her role as mayor, she really uses social media to activate the community.
Exactly. And then race and diversity topics like Not Your Canary, intersexuality and social difference, and that's presented by Cal Poly Cross-Cultural Centers.
Yep.
And so, one of the things that we were talking about in the lead-in is this is really to stimulate thought and conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So these topics really are to kind of challenge people's thinking and ask them to think about social injustices that they may or may not be aware of and may never run into in their personal lives or in the cocoon that they may or may not live in.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? And there's a wide level of introductory topics versus deep dives, so to speak. So someone could walk in and already be really passionate about a subject and dive deeper into it. And someone could walk in knowing relatively little about social justice or what their role is in it and find something that they could attend and connect with. Another thing that we're really excited about this year is a large group of local high school and junior high students will be attending through a sponsorship. So this will be a really awesome opportunity for them to be involved in these conversations.
About how many people generally come to the conference?
It varies widely.
Really?
People don't like to pre-register in this town, but we're expecting
I hear that from almost everybody. Or if they do register, it's like last minute, the 11th hour.
Planning events in this town for a while, so I'm not worried about it. We're expecting about 200 people.
Okay. Okay.
Our pre-registration deadline is tonight at midnight in order to get the pre-registration rates for the conference. Slightly higher rate goes into effect tomorrow and Saturday.
Yeah, it's only $15 for students, whether you're a Cal Poly student, high school student, Cuesta College student, and $20 for community members. And you do get breakfast and lunch.
Oh, yeah, you do. I noticed that on it. It includes a healthy breakfast and lunch.
Yep. And zero waste. We work with the zero waste group on campus to make sure that everything's being composted or recycled. So we're trying to live and breathe social justice in our planning as well.
And what do you think are going to be some of the more popular topics of the conference?
Yeah, so one that I'm really interested in, and I think that ties in really well to Ben Stern's keynote and about the First Amendment right when it comes to hate speech, is a de-escalation training by Wilshire Community Services Creative Mediation. They did this for people that were planning for the Women's March, as well as for some other on-campus groups, but an actual hands-on, how do you have civic discourse with people that are so passionate and on such opposite sides of the spectrum? I'm really looking forward to that one. I think Mayor Heidi Harmon's, like you mentioned, will be great. Actually, our local Women's March organizers will also be doing a workshop about how to start a movement, which is going to be fascinating. And I know they're just really passionate.
They've done an
people.
Excellent
yes,
job.
Yes, fabulous job. I'm excited about all of them. That's the hard part. There's only four. You can only go to four, and there's 27 to choose from.
Yeah.
And the NAACP is going to be doing something. Transitions Mental Health is going to be doing something about trauma in our society. I think there's some really great local nonprofits coming in to speak in their areas of expertise, as well as these students' groups, how to support sexual assault
survivors.
So
important for people to know, you don't need to be a student at Cal Poly in order to attend.
Absolutely. Anyone can attend.
Okay. Yeah.
It's open to all members of the Cal Poly community, faculty, staff, and students, and all members of the community at large. Yes, anybody can come.
Mm-hmm. And there are, you know, is this something that has been working? Do you guys work with faith and leadership, faith in communities, interfaith communities as well?
Yeah, we do.
We do, actually. We host the Interfaith Campus Council, and I chair that body of both on and off campus representatives of all types of different faith groups. And it goes across, it's very ecumenical. It goes across all faith traditions that have some type of either club or independent student organization or local church, campus ministerial kind of local church, synagogue, mosque, whatever, ministerial representation at Cal Poly. And so we bring them all together to talk quarterly, and we share with them how we're sort of become their sort of liaison to the campus and how they can be involved in really constructive ways. But it also gives all of these representatives a chance to share ideas and exchange in a very civil manner and look for ways to promote programs and activities that would model that for students on how to come from different faith traditions and all coexist in a peaceful way.
There has been so much discussion on campuses about the right to have freedom of speech, and if there are any lines on that, especially on campuses where it's been, you know, if someone has had extreme outlying beliefs and wanting to bring those to campuses, the incidents that we had at Berkeley, and are those going to be topics that are going to be talked about at this conference as well in terms of social justice?
Yeah, we're hoping Ben will bring some of that up.
Yeah.
The nice thing about showing the documentary on Friday night, Charlene has mentioned, you know, as a Holocaust survivor, that's such a big part of his story. And often when he's been speakers in the past, he's had to spend so much of his time telling that story. So our hope is that he'll be able to tell his story on Friday night through the documentary, and the conversation on Saturday as keynote will really be more about that activism, that what's lit that fire in him to stand up to these injustices and how others can do the same.
Mm-hmm.
And as a 96-year-old man, he's very eloquent and passionate and just, I would say, maybe not your average. We're really excited to hear from him and for our students to be able to have a Q&A with him.
Yeah, yeah. And that, you know, is that all included in the fee for registration? Can people just come to the Friday night showing?
Friday night is free and open to the public. So people could just come to that film showing, absolutely.
Okay.
Saturday, there's the fee, and we'll be serving breakfast and checking people in. And right after everyone gets in is when Ben will do his keynote speech. So kind of kicking us all off for the day before we go into that day of workshops.
Okay.
We'll have a brief activity at the end of the day and a closing, as well as a resource fair for a lot of the local nonprofits and campus groups to have information out for people to actually find ways to connect with things that they really resonated with them so they can get more involved. And we'll be doing a documentary showing at lunch, a mini documentary of our Cuba Alternative Breaks trip, and talking a little bit about that program of ours as well.
Okay. Okay, great. This is Central Coast Voices, and I'm your host, Chris Kingdom-Barker, on KCBX Public Radio from Salinas to Santa Barbara, on the web at kcbx.org. The upcoming Change in Status Quo conference includes Friday night documentary showing of Near Normal Man, a half-hour documentary film told in a firsthand account by Ben Stern, a Polish Jew who survives two ghettos, nine concentration camps, and two death marches. The Nazis identify him as one of the dangerous Jews of Warsaw Ghetto. He emerges alive only to face the Nazis again 30 years later, this time in Skokie, Illinois. Ben decides he will not let them march in his adopted hometown and confronts his rabbi, who tells the survivors to stay home, close the stage, and let them pass. Leading with a small group of survivors, Ben wages a fiercely public battle against the Nazis, ACLU, and Chicago Jewish leadership. Near Normal Man informs, strengthens, and compels viewers to face and take on circumstances of their own life. Ben is not the first or only person to suffer, nor will he be the last. We're going to talk with Charlene Stern, filmmaker of this powerful documentary now. Also with me on today's show that you've been listening to is are three individuals from Cal Poly Service for In Action: Bradley Kiker, Senior Coordinator, Megan Ruvar, Coordinator, and Philip Goodwin, Graduate Student. If you have comments or questions for today's guests, please call us at 805-781-3875. The show is live, and we'd love to hear from you. And we're going to take a call from Charlene. Are you there, Charlene?
I am. Thank you, Chris.
Oh, thank you. And, you know, what I was reading was actually a quote from you. And Ben is your dad. And just, you know, I just saw a little clip from the trailer of your film. And, oh, my goodness, even that was powerful.
Thank you. Thank you. He has quite a story and quite a message.
So what I understand in hearing from the guests today is your dad is he 96 now?
He is 96.
And tell me a little bit about the making of this documentary, Charlene. How long has it been in the making, and what prompted you to do this?
Near Normal Man took 7 years to make.
Wow.
And it was released the beginning of last year. It took 7 years for two reasons. One is it's an independently financed documentary film, and raising funds takes a lot of effort. I've done a lot of successful things in my life. This is my first film. And so convincing people that not only was I going to make this film, I was going to complete it, and it was going to be a good film.
Mm-hmm.
That's not easy for many, many good people who are ready to fund good causes. But as a first-time filmmaker, I had that hurdle. And the other hurdle was, there's 1,000 Holocaust films out there.
Yeah.
Why do we need another one?
Another one, right. So how did you answer those questions, Charlene, if someone asked you that in terms of funding? What was it, besides this being about your father, which I'm sure is, for you, extremely compelling, what was different in this story?
Well, to answer the first question about funding,
mm-hmm.
once you know my father's story once you've seen the film. It will mean a lot when I tell you I am my parents' daughter. And so quitting was not an option.
Okay.
The challenge was, how was I going to make a really good film? Having worked with creative people my whole career, but never having made a film before. So I was fortunate to bring creative producer Vivian Kleiman, who's a Peabody Award winner, and with her addition to the film team, I was both in kindergarten and graduate school at the same time.
How long was it before, when did you know that you'd be able to get funding for the film? You said
I was
in
the tall weeds for about a year and a half. The first year, I was delusional. I thought I could learn how to edit film myself. That is not in my skill set.
Okay, so you had to find somebody.
Are there people snickering in the background there? That's what I want to know. Okay. So it took me a while to agree that I needed to focus on what I knew how to do best, which is direct and take the vision of the film forward and let the brilliant people who know how to edit and make a good film make this story into a good film.
Great.
And to answer the second question, there are many Holocaust stories and films, good and bad. Most Holocaust documentaries of survivors end at liberation, or they fast forward to a family trip back to Poland or where the family came from.
Right, to revisit, yes.
Neither one of those two things are part of this film.
Right.
My father's story, his life, he takes being liberated and moves to freeing himself, being liberated from the barracks after the death march on May 8, 1945, the American Army came in and liberated the few survivors. But he realized he could not be free until he let go of hatred. And then he became a free man. And then he became an activist for justice. Most especially when it began in 1972, where he found his public voice, when a Professor Butz, B-U-T-Z, excuse me, from Northwestern University, published the world's first Holocaust denial book. He called Northwestern University in Illinois and asked them to set up a lecture for the history professors and students. And he spoke to them, and then he called me. I was already in California. And he said, "Shar, you would have been proud. No one fell asleep." But that's when he found his public voice and began speaking to students, parents, organizations, and then in 1977, the Nazis applied for a permit to march in Skokie, Illinois.
And
he would not. Pardon?
And this film really is about that whole awakening for him and his activism.
It goes through Skokie and what he did to win despite losing at the Illinois Supreme Court he stopped the Nazis from marching. And the message is so critical for today's young people, because when I began the film 8 years ago and spoke about what happened in Skokie, for young people, it is so long ago and far away, or they don't even know the event existed.
Yes.
To talk about the Holocaust was so ancient history.
Mm-hmm.
And I set out to make this film for young people everywhere. And therefore, I needed to tell it in a way that would take root in the heart and the minds of young people. And so making this film was driven by my purpose to bring my father's message to the world and to the next generation who will own what we're leaving it, which is a growing national and international, I don't even know what to call it. I don't want to call it a crisis, but there is growing concern, serious concern about the future of our democracy, the future of our globe and global warming, the future of immigrants in this country. That's who I made the film for mm-hmm. young people, and for young people who are aggrieved, rightly aggrieved. The message is about addressing the aggrievement and not turning to hate.
And Charlene, you said that you started this film, or you started on this journey with this film 8 years ago. So, you know, what was it that you were seeing 8 years ago that prompted this? Are you seeing more of that now?
Well, 8 years ago, we had a different administration.
Correct.
We had a far more progressive or liberal agenda.
Yes.
There was a lot of reason for hope.
But you were still wanting to give a message through your film, were you not?
Absolutely.
Okay, and so
because the work of, because every person at some point in their lives will need to pull out courage, hopefully kindness, and hope. And forces that we can't predict may seek to destroy them, whether it's a medical crisis, whether it's a job loss, whether mm-hmm. it is cyberbullying. Mm-hmm. I look at what young people today will be facing.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that I wanted to give them an example of one man who survived, who insisted upon surviving and remaining human.
Mm-hmm.
Because all mm-hmm. around us, it's not so hard to be good when you're surrounded by people who behave well.
True. Yes.
It is a very different story and challenge when you're surrounded or you witness people behaving badly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is about not standing by,
mm-hmm.
not acquiescence. Am I saying it right?
Acquiescing? Yes.
Yes. Acquiescing mm-hmm. by your silence,
mm-hmm.
by your non-defiance of hate speech, of bullying, of racism, of things that go wrong. That's the key message. Mm-hmm. And my father's, I would have understood, once you know the details of his life, I would have understood had I inherited an angry, bitter, depressed, withdrawn father.
But you're saying you did not.
I got the opposite, Chris.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, to me, first I thought, as I knew the details, I might spend my life trying to figure out how could human beings do this to other human beings?
Right.
And then I realized that my father, as soft-spoken as he is, astounded me by the courage and kindness and hope he brings to the world. He's 96 with the heart and mind of a 30-something-year-old. And since he's, I am his daughter, and I love him fiercely, but I need to tell you, this film gives you a window into one young man. He was 17 when the Nazis came in, and his life was shattered, and how he remained human was an act of defiance. The Nazis only fed him and prisoners enough food to keep them alive for 6 weeks.
Charlene, if someone was concerned about not wanting to go see this film because they would see it as something that would be really depressing and downing, what I'm hearing from you is that this is a film about inspiration. And it's a film about hope, and it's a film about moving forward. Would that be correct?
You're absolutely right. It is one man's story, and it is the story of the resilience of the human spirit.
Which is something that I'm hearing from you is what we all need at this point.
And we never know when we need to pull it out. We have screened to thousands of students. They don't want to leave Ben after the screening and hearing him speak.
I'll bet.
They don't want to leave him.
I'll bet he becomes their best friend.
And so you know that it's resonating.
Yeah.
You know that it's touching a deep need for them in this world. And we're looking so forward to being there tomorrow night and Saturday. And I hope all your listeners will join us. It'll be an experience you won't forget.
Well, we're going to, we thank you for joining us on the air today, Charlene, and for making this remarkable film. It's going to preview tomorrow night at 6 p.m. at the University Room 220. And it is free. We encourage people to come and see it. Don't need to be a Cal Poly student to come. The film name is Near Normal Man. It features Ben Stern and his journey and is a testament of his strength and his love for humanity by his daughter, who is the filmmaker. And thank you, Charlene, for joining us today.
You're very welcome. And you don't have to be between the ages of 16 and 24 to come.
No, you don't. Thanks, Charlene.
I appreciate it.
Okay.
And enjoy the rest of the program. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Charlene.
Bye.
I'm Chris Kington Barker with you on Central Coast Voices on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio. And if you just joined us and you want to hear this show in its entirety, you can do this because all KCBX shows that are locally produced are available on demand. You can listen to the latest of any local show anytime by going to kcbx.org and clicking on demand under the How to Listen tab on our menu. Then just select the show you want on the drop-down menu. We have probably about maybe 10 minutes left on this show with my guest from Cal Poly Center for Service in Action, Bradley Kiker, Senior Director, Coordinator, excuse me, Megan Rivoire, Coordinator, and Philip Goodwin, Graduate Assistant. We just heard from Charlene Stern, filmmaker for Near Normal Man, and we're going to take a call from Julie. Hi, Julie.
Hi.
Did you have a comment or a question?
Well, not really a question, just a comment. Yeah. I was fortunate enough to hear Charlene and Ben and watch the movie in Modesto, where I live, at the Jewish synagogue when they presented it, their program, several months ago.
How wonderful.
I just wanted to let your listeners know that it's a powerful program, very moving, very emotional. I am so glad that we took the time to go see Ben and his daughter. You know, there's not very many Holocaust survivors left, and I think, like Charlene said, there's so many different movies and books and things that have been written about it, but to see someone in person willing to share his story, it was beyond incredible.
Oh, I'm so glad you shared that, Julie, because it's really nice to hear from the perspective of someone. And I think, you know, when people hear about a Holocaust film, I think they tend to want to stay away from it because they are concerned about how it's going to make them feel, or that it's going to pull them into a place that it becomes a powerful place that... And you're saying it was an uplifting film and really exactly what Charlene want people to feel.
It really was. I appreciated the historical accounts of the film, but what I really gleaned from it was the personal account from Ben and his spirit and the challenge to never give up. Mm-hmm. You know, he's lived that his whole life, and we knew of a family friend that was a Holocaust survivor as well, but he chose the opposite. He never talked about it with his family.
Yes.
And so they really never knew what he was thinking. And I think Ben's ability to share that whole life account with his family and with the world is just a tremendous opportunity for anybody to be able to witness that and to see that.
And do you think this, as Charlene stated, that this is a message that is important for younger people to hear, for us to hear?
I think it's an important message for everyone to hear.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Julie, for calling in.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Okay, you too.
Bye.
So let's kind of get back to you guys and figure out. We have about 5 minutes left, so I want to make sure that we're hitting points that you want to make. So I'm going to start with you over here, Bradley.
Sure. Well, again, you can find out more about the conference and see a rundown of the workshop offerings that will be available on the Saturday day-long conference at csq.calpoly.edu.
Okay.
And then there's also very front and center, right as you come onto that page, is a registration link. And you can pay for your registration fees online. Again, those registration fees are at a great rate, $15 for students and $20 for community members.
And that includes breakfast and
that
lunch.
That includes breakfast, lunch, all these great
the movies.
Educational experiences, and a tote bag, reusable shopping tote bag full of all kinds of really great conference materials and nice swag collateral pieces for you to enjoy that are all very useful, notebook and things like that. So we hope that people will enjoy those. And then after midnight tonight, our conference rates go up to $20 for students and $25 for community members. So
okay.
We hope that you will get on that site and let us know you're coming.
And I'm going to go to you, Megan, over here.
Yeah, basically what Brad just said, we would love to see anyone there. It's not just for students, it's for community members as well. And it's just a great way to do something. And like, just like our world can be a little depressing right now, and there's so many issues that it's hard to know which one you want to do something about. So this will be a great way for people to learn about different social justice issues and really walk away with something that they feel more knowledgeable about and they have action plans to address.
Yeah, and you've been at these conferences, and you know, so from a student perspective, from a younger person perspective, what do you take away from it?
Yeah, I was just actually talking about this with a friend of mine. It's a great opportunity to get fired up about social justice issues, but also it's a great way to learn more about how each one of us can make a real positive change in this world, which I think is so critical, you know, here in the San Luis Obispo community and our global community as well. So if you want to be in a room with like-minded people who have a passion for helping others and changing the world, then this is certainly the conference for you. Even if you're just a beginning, you know, or intermediate level person who's passionate about the subject, come and learn more about what we can do.
Well, and give me the website again for people to go to if they want more information about it, want to see what the workshops are, what they can select from. What is it?
It's csq.calpoly.edu.
Okay. And is there a phone number if somebody wanted to call to get information?
Yeah, you could call me, 805-756-7011. And our email address is serviceinaction@calpoly.edu. We would love to hear from you and see you there.
If you're a student at Cal Poly, too, and you haven't taken advantage of Cal Poly Center for Service in Action, encourage you to also check that out. And where are you located?
We are located in Building 52, Room E22.
Okay. So, again, come on out for that conference. Starts tomorrow with a free film. Anybody can go. Don't need to join the conference for that. And I want to thank my guests for today's show, Cal Poly Center for Service in Action. And today we've been talking with Bradley Kiker, who's the senior coordinator for that program, Megan Rivoire, who is the coordinator, Philip Goodwin, graduate assistant, Charlene Stern, filmmaker for Near Normal Man, joined us. And next week, please join your host, Fred Monroe. Central Coast Voices is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX and made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and thank you for joining us on Central Coast Voices.